Sully back here to solidify a wonderful guest here tonight. We got Corey in the house from Podcasting After Dark. Just plenty of great shows on the Blast From Our Past podcast network, and it never gets old just hearing the numerous collaborations on Action Action, Talking Back, and $2 Late Fee. Welcome, yeah. Sir.
Oh, thanks, buddy. Thanks for having me, dude. Appreciate it. And it's been a long time since you and I talked face to face because we did that watch list like 2 years ago.
It was,
man,
like a Verhoeven special or some shit. It was,
dude,
crazy.
Where did the time go, my man?
The world went down in a handbasket and we were trying to adjust.
This is true. But that's, thanks for having me on the show, bro. Really appreciate it. Glad to be here.
You guys never cease to amaze me. Just the numerous guests and the down to earth conversations. It's out of this world, because long story short, you're talking about everyday stuff. And before we get to the nerding out part where it's like, I love doing this, and it makes everyone's day. But
thanks, man. I appreciate it. We have a good time. Zach and I have a good time. I know Zach's been on your show as well and whatnot. So
all good,
we appreciate all
these days, I swear.
Yeah. All the love that you guys give us, man. Really appreciate it.
Totally. Zach, his numerous voices, and let alone how he emphasizes his main points and then does an about face, is like, he's a walking Hollywood machine.
He's the knowledge bank of the show. I'm there just for more like for shits and giggles. That's my thing.
Yeah, but you really play off him well. And it's just cool to just get this sort of nostalgia, because you're reminding everybody, hey, everyone tries to fit into some club, but you got to be you. And
you know, and Podcasting After Dark was always incepted to be those movies that like we sort of like loved to sort of sneak into the basement at night and watch and everything when our parents were asleep. It's like that kind of stuff, where Zach's other show, $2 Late Fee, is more of the, they're still cult stuff, but more of the brighter side of the cult world, whereas Pad is the deep dark secret of the cult world. But then within that, I'm the mainstream guy, whereas Zach goes even deeper into the deep cut. So I always like to tell Zach that sort of my picks, you know, stuff like The Thing and everything, the mainstream stuff, they bring people in. But Zach's picks give us the street cred, like Tough Turf and New Kids and stuff like that. Stuff I'd never even seen before. Driving, so he digs pretty deep. And I got to admit, one of our newest reviews. So, for example, I picked Them. And, yes. And Zach immediately picked Vigilante. And yeah, I think that kind of tells you everything about our two viewpoints.
Well, and you guys, you know, you and Not a Bomb and even Cinema Psyops all do a wonderful job of describing what kind of a movie is it. You know, is it a mainstream B picture? Is it a drive-in? Is it a movie that varies by crowd or the mood? Is it an Evil Dead type movie where you can take it at any kind of face value? You know, it's right. And you like to also just outline is like, where you would you have probably discovered this back in the day if it wasn't a video store or satellite?
Exactly. And both of us worked at video stores growing up, so we have all those tales from the video store, man. It was a wild time. But this is fun because I have been reading comic books my entire life.
Totally.
But I rarely get a chance to talk about them on Podcasting After Dark, although we have. We discussed
Alien Free on...
Huh?
Alien 3 on Talking Back.
Yes, we discussed Alien 3, the adaptation of that original screenplay, which was really interesting. And then it's really old, but on the Patreon page, we actually reviewed this two-part Dark Horse comic for The Thing. Zach, yes. And I reviewed that and broke that down. So, but like I said, I've been reading comics my entire life. I'll just give you a background on me. I was born in 78, so I am 100% an 80s kid and a 90s like teenager. My first series that I collected was The Punisher, probably when I was like 10 years old.
Same.
But I read some X-Men, but what I fell in love with, what I read religiously, were the 90s Dark Horse Aliens and Predator and Terminator comics. Mm-hmm. These were my Bibles. These were my religion. And then to kind of give a little bit of a backstory or a piece of the puzzle, my dad took me to see Aliens when I was 8 years old. When it came out in the theater, I saw it opening weekend. Blew my mind. And to this day, I always say Star Wars is life. But Aliens is my single favorite movie of all time. So
Newt for the win.
Yeah, dude. So I'm excited to talk about everything that is in this universe. I love Xenomorphs. I also saw Predator in the theater opening weekend with my father. Sweet. I saw Predator 2 in the theater opening weekend with my father. So, and sadly, I saw Aliens versus Predator opening weekend.
we'll give some 90s sentiment on how, you know, back when I grew up, I thought it was just, I knew about the Predator 2, like, Easter egg of the alien thing in the cave at the end, but I always thought they only just coexisted in, like, video games.
Yeah.
Because that was, like, my access to it. There was arcades for either franchise, but then you saw, like, kind of like Metal Gear Solid, there was always an expansion pack for computer gamers and
right.
Xbox guys. And lo and behold, you know, as soon as you saw these movies, the opening credits say, based on the Dark Horse comic, and you're like, whoa, there's a Dark Horse comic? Was it better than this?
And for me, like, I personally like the assembly cut of Alien 3, but I kind of don't really spin off my canon from there. I go Alien, Aliens, and then I go the Dark Horse universe. That's sort of my Alien, you know, canon, and that's my sort of trajectory. Predator.
Do you consider it part of the Val Verde saga?
No, I'm not sure. Okay, what is the Val Verde saga?
So it's been, long story short, crafted by Joel Silver and Steven D'Souza. That's the fictional South American country. He implies, especially in the novelization of Predator, as well as some of the video games and comics, that that's the country they go to. But
okay,
it's also the country in Commando, the dictator in Die Hard 2. And to make things even more twisted, D'Souza has had some of his other Die Hard characters in other movies like Ricochet. And the truck companies in Die Hard are the same ones as in Speed. And Ridley Scott really added to the pile by implying in the Prometheus special features that the Weyland-Yutunda company is the replicant company in the Blade Runner films. So there you go.
I knew about the Blade Runner connection to Aliens, because in Blade Runner 2049, in sort of that climax where they're flying over the water and they're about to fight in the water, there's a giant Sulaco style ship from Aliens there. And I mean, that image is burned into my brain of how that ship looks. And I saw it in the theater and I was like, oh, that's immediately apparent. And then it came out, you know, he said, but yeah, these are a shared universe. You can almost assume that, like, maybe Blade Runner is taking place at the same time Alien is taking place, you know, essentially.
Totally.
I love that. I didn't know about the South American country. That's cool, man. I love that kind of stuff. Like, I really do love that kind of connective tissue and people sort of throw in sort of Easter eggs like that and everything.
So Sosa's still going to town on it. He was on Rogue Commentary recently.
Okay.
A UK podcaster who invites screenwriters to do their own commentary for their movie.
Oh, that's a cool idea.
And he's still going to town in it. He's like, suck it, Marvel and DC. I created my first cinematic universe.
Yes, he did, man. That's super cool. That's really cool. I'll have to dig into that a little bit.
I thought St. Elsewhere was simple. Good God. This is like, whoa, here, and then this and that, and in the future, then this.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you had to choose a team, is it going to be the Xenomorph or is it going to be the Hunters?
My team will always be Colonial Marines.
There you go. Third party, baby.
Dude, so I realized growing up as a kid, I am an armorphile. I love Boba Fett, love armor everywhere.
Everything,
and as
man.
A kid, I still think to this day, I'm 45 years old. I still think Colonial Marines armor is some of the coolest armor ever. I've seen Aliens like a million freaking times, but a lot of time when I was like in middle school and stuff, I would kind of turn the movie off when Ripley had to go save Newt, because it's like, you know, Hicks was out of commission and everything. I like the dropships. I like the Marines. I like the pulse rifles. I like all that stuff.
Vasquez
and Drake and everybody. But for your, you know, I guess I would say picking Xenos or Predators would probably go to what I enjoyed drawing as a kid. And I drew a lot of Xenomorphs. So I would have to probably pick the Xeno over Predator. I mean, I love the Predators though, but yeah
totally. I'm with you. I was kind of more of a Terminator guy growing up, but I always liked to, I loved joking with people how there was a Predator versus Terminator fight, but it was Arnold and human tissue.
Yeah.
Such. And I don't know why he's just never revisited the character. Like, he was supposed to be in the last one. They cut him out. He's in a video game tie-in, but it underperformed. And it's like, I don't know why he doesn't want to revisit that character as much as all his other franchises.
Well, we can. I know that at one point you and I started this discussion on talking about Terminator, and then it kind of turned into this.
Right.
So I'm totally fine if at some point in the future we go swing back to Terminator, because I did read all those Dark Horse comics as well. And actually, in the Aliens versus Predator arcade game by Sega, came out in, I think I wrote it down, 94. It was one of those side scroller brawlers back in the day, like Streets of Rage and everything.
Oh,
and you
sweet.
Could either play four players. You could either play as two predators or two humans. One of the humans was like this samurai cyborg chick, and another human was his name was Schaefer. And he was a big Arnold Schwarzenegger looking dude, and he was part cyborg. And there are references in the game description to Cyberdyne stuff. And so therefore sort of connecting Terminator to Aliens and Predator as well.
And I'm with you, man.
And this arcade game, dude, this arcade game was so awesome that it's, of course, hand-drawn animation because it's 94.
2D.
But because Sega doesn't have the rights anymore to Aliens versus Predator, we will never see it. It'll never come out. And it was one of my favorite arcade games as a kid. It was so awesome.
You think it's going for $2 million on eBay right now, probably?
Probably,
from some
yeah.
Japan.
Exactly. Exactly.
And they'll make a disclaimer. Only ships to the UK. You bastards. I need it here in the States.
But yeah, dude, I love the term. I love Terminator as well, man. Like, I was there opening weekend for Terminator 2, bro. Like, that was... What a wild time to be alive, like watching the Guns N' Roses, you know, video, you know, and everything and just being permeated and being like the perfect age for it. And just
and it
being
can't
like,
be recreated.
Crap, it can't.
They
it
keep
really
trying.
Can't.
But
no matter how good the Marvel movie is or whatever that comes out, it's just it's never going to be the same. You know what I mean? It's just, man, Terminator 2 was so damn good.
Absolutely. And on Corey's point, it is intriguing how with all these collaborations, I mean, there was a bunch of fan films. I'll definitely try and discuss it at a later point. But I always thought the Batman subject started with the Dead End fan film. And truth be told, no, that's not true at all. The Predator fought him in a more recent comic. And then they did a 90s crossover comic. And they both... Batman has not only fought Judge Dredd, but so have the Alien and the Predator. And so it's like, it's just interesting how all these crossovers are very common. Painkiller Jane fights the Terminator at one point, and then it's just like, it was basically a compromise. There's never going to be any movie studio that signs off on this. Too many properties to, you know, get the rights to. And,
and honestly, at this point, I think the Terminator brand is kind of tarnished. I saw all the movies, and I personally very much enjoy Terminator 3. And I actually think Dark Fate was so good. But by that point, from Salvation to Genesis was terrible. Genesis was absolutely terrible. And I think that, you know, Dark Fate suffered because at that point, the franchise had just been so neutered by two terrible, terrible movies, you know.
And people and saw the trailer and they thought it can't be good. And it's like, well, yeah, that's just it. A trailer will kill a movie.
It will, but Dark
Even
Fate, man, was
it.
Was so good. Dark Fate was fantastic, I thought. And actually, the Fox TV show, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, the first two seasons were great. And it even ended on such an awesome cliffhanger in the second season. I'm going to spoil it, guys. It's like 10,
it's
15 years old.
Yeah.
But it ends with like them kind of taught like a T-1000 saving them and the implication that T-1000s are kind of sentient and you can't reprogram them. You have to just reason with them and kind of show them the light sort of thing. I was like, this is awesome. And then it died. You know what I mean? Then they didn't go anywhere with it. And I was like, at least finish it in comic book form or something. But they just,
the
Arcana Chronicles just ended. It just went poof and was gone. And it was so good.
I think that's why they hired the head writer on that to be on Dark Fate. He was just like, hey, you know, he didn't like the other movies and he just wanted to do his version of what happens after T2. And I think that's just it. That's why they brought him on for Dark Fate.
That makes sense, man. And he was, again, that movie was highly underrated, and I don't think it was not justified for being panned, you know.
It's like they were overreacting the same way they did with Ghostbusters. It's like, well, that's different. That's a whole different set of characters that didn't grow on people. Was meant to be this, and it just was amazing. Like, even with James Cameron like coming in and everything, there was just so many people just talking smack before it had even come out. And I'm with you, dude. With all the movies you do, I never understand the point of, I mean, you guys have covered all other sorts of experimental stuff, like the works of Richard Stanley and what have you, and Abel Ferreira. And it's just maddening to me how people want to talk smack about someone without, you know, finalizing whatever it is, a court case, actual movie, but they'll just look at production art and say, it looks like shit. And it's like, it doesn't cut the mustard. It doesn't do anything for anybody. And
no.
Neither side wins either.
No, I agree. And, you know, also knee jerk reactions to like canceling people before, I always thought that it was innocent before proven guilty. You know what I mean? So,
like the talent, but not the person. Instead, mm-hmm. it's off with their head now. And it's like, well, if I grew up with this person, it's pretty hard for me to kick them out of my life, and I'm not going to.
Yeah, Zach and I have discussions about that, you know, on the show, because, you know, we both
you're very
grew
careful
up with, like,
with it.
Yeah, we try to be, you know, and because, you know, we grew up with like Mel Gibson movies and stuff. And yeah, sure, maybe he's not the best person, but I mean, I'm sorry, but I still fucking love Martin Riggs, you know, like I still love that character. I still love Max Rockatansky, you know, even though I don't maybe necessarily love Mel Gibson, but I grew up with Road Warrior and Mad Max. I can't just all of a sudden, no, I'm not gonna, you know. And I think a lot of times too, it's different with a musician versus a movie, because so many people work on a movie, you know. You can't, I just feel like, so the poor gaffer,
yes.
You know, that poor gaffer who worked his butt off to get the lighting rigs and everything up, and then just because the director makes some comment, and not a good one, sure, but now the whole movie's destroyed because of one person when so many people worked on it, you know.
I'm with you. Like, and they still go rely on test screenings. And I'm like, what does it matter? If you don't tell the audience anything and hope that they figure it out, you're already doomed. And I'm with you. Like, people are talking about this. I'm not trying to derail too much, but the Batgirl film. And
right.
It's like, well, even if it sucks ass, I don't think it's fair for all those cinematographers and all those what have you to not have something to put on their reel, let alone their IMDb. And yet you're releasing this Flash film, which everyone's kind of hoping is like Morbius, because they think it might be good, but they don't want the actor who's a criminal to be back. So it's just like, well, how you can have it.
I know I agree with you. I mean, it's like, I'm not a fan of Ezra Miller, but I want to go see Michael Keaton as Batman and
some fun, entertaining movie of the Flash.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, I'm going to go see it, you know, but I don't want to support Ezra Miller, but what do I do here? Like, I want to support Michael Keaton, but I don't want to support Ezra Miller. Do I close my eyes during all the Flash scenes? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
no.
It sucks, man. And now the whole thing with Jonathan Majors and as Kang, you know, but again, I still believe innocent until proven guilty. He may be guilty. I don't know, but like
he played a villain. So
yeah.
It's kind of, for me, it's kind of like Kevin Spacey. This is like, well, he's still a good actor. And to be fair, we're supposed to hate him in the movie, so it doesn't really derail me from seeing whatever he's in. But it sucks how, like you say, so much of it just takes a while to unfold. And we're having to, I mean, the Alien and Predator comics here that we were looking at, I was able to glimpse at some other ones before prepping.
Yeah.
They really give you a good idea of kind of, they're not really as deep on social commentary, but so many people when Predator 2 came out were talking smack because they had it set in an alternate Escape from New York kind of 97. But I thought that was ambitious of them to line, hey, you know, ask yourself, who's the real villain? They were kind of took a universal monster approach. I appreciated where you might think the creature is the real villain, but really it might be the corporation that wants to kind of have them be guinea pigs.
Yeah, and that's always a theme, like in Aliens, you know, with Weyland Yutani and, you know, Burke Carter J, you know, and everything. And
all of them.
Me personally, I love Predator 2. I know it gets a lot of hate.
I don't get it.
As someone who was reading the Predator comics, it felt very much like they were because the first Predator comic series features Dutch's brother as a police officer in New York.
Wow.
And they even, the subway scene in Predator 2, the movie, was lifted directly from the exact same scene in the comic book. So they were already sort of kind of not trying to tie them in, but kind of being like, okay, you know, we're aware of the comic books kinda and everything.
Like that Sega Terminator implication. It's just the whole, they gave creators more leniency before we had it kind of be like Star Wars and Track, where it's like, be careful what you do before you sign the document. It's all canon now.
Exactly. And there's places I do enjoy, like Marvel, everything's connected. And I do enjoy what they're trying to do with Star Wars and everything. But at the same time, it's nice to have things can be standalone on their own.
We'll return after these messages.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shocked, the pop culture podcast brought to you by four aging millennials and our outdated opinions. Join us every Tuesday as we discuss movies, TV, games, and even music, new and old.
Dude, what do you think you're doing?
Are you seriously trying to record a promo without us right now?
Well, yeah.
Dude, you can't just do the promo by yourself. Who's going to listen to that?
Yeah, and you probably haven't even told them that we're a pop culture podcast where we always agree on everything. For instance, the Sam Raimi trilogy easily being the best of the Spider-Man movies.
No. But I think we can all agree that Jaws is a classical masterpiece.
Nope, don't like that. But we do all agree that the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is the best in the Skywalker saga. Right, guys?
That comment is so ridiculous. I don't even know where to
Anyways, that'll do it from all of us here at Culture Shock. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win Show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
So, I'm a big fan of Predators, you know, with what's his name?
Brody and Alicia Braga.
Robert Rodriguez directed. I think that movie is fun as hell. And it takes, As someone, again, who grew up reading the Dark Horse comic books, this felt like a four-part issue series to me. It just felt like it fits perfectly in that comic book universe of Predator and everything.
Especially with the Yakuza guy. I was looking at this here now for today, I was like, whoa. These guys definitely read these comics and got some inspiration. I know I think Jim Davis is like the main producer overseeing the saga now for Fox, but you can tell he just loves just fun slugfest, much like Joel Silver.
And to kind of go back to the Aliens versus Predator comics, which is what we're supposed to be talking about.
No, it's okay. We're just getting warmed up.
You know, the main character, Machiko. I liked her character. I think she was really cool in this one, but she does get expanded more so later on. She kind of joins up with the Predators and everything like that. I never quite cared for the sequels of the. I like this one. I always like this one better. And by the way, I have all the original issues. They just happen to be in my mom's basement, 3,000 miles away back in Maryland. I'm in Oregon. But I read all of these. I read these in real time. I read them when they came out. I was, I guess, around 12-ish years old. And I was frequently going to because these came out in 1990. And I was reading comic books like weekly then, and mostly the Dark Horse stuff. So I read these monthly. Like I read these issues monthly, including the, you know, the prequel that took place in issue zero that took place in Dark Horse yes. Presents. So we can, I mean, we can talk about all of that, but just so we, you know, as a point of understanding where I'm coming from, I read all of these in real time as they came out.
Did you have a pretty reliable comic book shop?
Yeah. Or... Yeah, I did. I had a good one in town. He was really cool. And I really liked that dude. But like, you know, at the time too, this was a freaking dream come true for us kids. Like again, Aliens vs. Predator movie was not out yet. Would that come out in 2001 or something?
Right.
So that wasn't out. Predator 2 was about to come out. So that was 1990. So I think maybe Predator 2 came out around the same time. And then Aliens vs. Predator came out, and then we see that little Easter egg in Predator 2, and it all seemed like we were leading up to something amazing. And then the Aliens vs. Predator movie sat in development hell for 15 years, yep. essentially. And then we got the garbage that we got. But this
kind of like Freddy and Jason, where people were hyped for it. And then after the fact, they were like, yeah, it was pretty half-assed. Why? But then there's still more comic continuations, including one with Ash. And it's just from Evil Dead. And so same here with Alien Predator. I'm looking at the list. There was one back in 2019, 2020, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, it keeps going. But this one, I always thought this one had a bit of a charm to it. You know, it being the first. One thing it should be noted is that since it came out pre Alien 3, they don't take into account that the xenomorphs change via their host. You know what I mean? So basically, all the aliens look like what we call warriors now, and I do like the fact that they've sort of the comics and recent stuff in the video games like Aliens Fireteam Elite, they've started to explain things like these warriors come out of the humans and that's why they're so strong and big, then the little runners come out of like other things and stuff like that.
Cool stuff.
But at the time there was none of that, so everything here was the warriors, even if they came out of a snake, even if they came out of a you know, some kind of rhinoceros type thing, cattle, you know. But one thing I thought was kind of neat about this was that it kind of showed you this world that they were on and what they were trying to do with it, the colonists. It showed you what Hadley's Hope might have been, LV-426, if it didn't get run over by aliens. It shows you what they were trying to accomplish and maybe what they would have become if they hadn't have gotten destroyed, essentially.
They really hit home on that there is hope. It's not a grim future. They have the alien kind of scientific chat. And then a lot of the other, I guess I could call them ranch hands, kind of definitely look like Jesse Ventura's Predator character.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, on Corey's point, he did a wonderful job of just making this make sense to me, because it was very confusing, folks, because there's so many omnibuses, paperbacks. And I was like, wait. And
yeah. Yes. Unfortunately. Yeah. But as a first-time reader for you, I do want to know what you thought of it.
It was very light, and like you say, it there's some areas that could be a little more interesting, and then there's a lot that when you get to all the combat and seeing them be suspenseful is like, it's just so cool to see the illustrations. I wasn't actually too familiar with these artists. I'm reading them off now, but
Phil Norwood did issues 0 through 3, and then Chris Warner, he did issue 4. I don't think it was his best work. I think he was probably brought in as a hired gun for that one, although he is a Dark Horse sort of artist. But I personally love Chris Warner when he's doing good art, or maybe just as a better inker. He did the first run of the Predator comics. He did the first run of the Terminator comics for Dark Horse. And he is one of my favorite artists in the Dark Horse stable at the time, when it seems like he has the time to work on it. But I think Phil Norwood did a great job with issues 0 through 3.
Sweet. I see that some of them had done some other ones. The most I got was the writer, Randy Stradley. He's apparently done, I knew there was Marvel Godzilla comics. I had no idea there was Dark Horse ones as well. So he's done a bunch of those.
Yeah, Dark Horse was Dark Horse had that license, I think, around the same time as well. I believe Art Adams was like doing the art in them. Dark Horse for a while was the license company. Like, it was the company that made really good comic books based on licensed properties. They had a Thing series. And unlike Marvel, just I guess to put things into perspective, they didn't create ongoing series. It was like mini series. So this was like four issues, if you don't count issue zero, you know, that was in Dark Horse Presents. Right. So you would get a trade. It would just be this. So it'd be Aliens versus Predator, and that's it. And then the next one would be called something else. And the next one would be called something else. And, you know, of course, your comic book store owner would know that you would want all the Predator comics. Like, just give me all the Predator. Give me all the Aliens versus Predator. But they I think it gave them more flexibility. Because then they could have all these little spinoffs, and sometimes they didn't even have the same characters going through. Like now all of a sudden this next four issues would be somebody completely different. 1,000%. But they did continue the story of, you know, Machiko. But in this one, I guess, you know, a little quick overview, basically they're on this planet, the colony planet. They get, you know, predators come there and lay down some eggs to turn it into a hunting ground. And they do explain that the colony's only been there for like 3 or 4 years. So
yeah, Prosperity Wells, and it,
the there you Chibusa go, Prosperity Wells
Corporation is the one.
Yep.
And aside from the Dr. Rebna, and like you say, Machiko being kind of the Japanese Ripley, for lack of a better
pretty much
contrast.
Yeah.
We then get a predator who befriends him called Broken Tusk, and
Broken. Yep.
And kudos to all the authors for continuing this trend of basically the Garfield thought box. It's like, hey, we're getting his inner mind, so he's not just a mindless creature. Because, you know, the closest we got was kind of like the Thing, where it would imitate the characters and how they sounded and do the evil laugh. But to actually hear him speaking and the thrill of the kill and the hunt, that it really does cut the mustard here. It's really awesome.
And to see like their society behind the scenes, I, as a kid, relished in looking, like seeing what the predators were doing, like on their, you know, yeah. And they were like fighting over like who was in charge. And, you know, there's this honor system, and, you know, spoiler going forward, Machiko sort of, so she survives this whole thing. And while doing so, she befriends Broken Tusk, you know, and they kill the queen. They sort of have to nuke the planet. They don't nuke the planet, but they nuke the site, you know, basically.
They get some shit done.
And, you know, as Broken Tusk is dying, he recognizes how strong Machiko was. And he kind of brands her forehead with a symbol that other predators will know that she's not to be hunted, that she's one of them. And she eventually kind of links up with them. And honestly, she doesn't fare well in their society and kind of has to break free. And I just, me personally reading those comics, I didn't kind of find it all that interesting. I almost wish she did fare better, because I thought that would be sort of more interesting, because I expected her not to do well, because why? It's an alien society. You're not going to do well in it.
Yeah.
It but kind
of
here
becomes a lesser Planet of the Apes, where it's like, well, I thought we were going to build this. Now it just seems like it's just an excuse for more conflict.
Yeah. But in this comic, I like her character, because she goes from this like stiff corporate person and like her friend who's kind of like the person who was running the Prospect Wells before her. He's trying to say like, look, you need to get out more. You need to start befriending some of these people, you know, and they do a great job of making her character actually have an arc in this. No one else really has an arc. You know, I wouldn't even say Broken Tusk has an arc, because he's kind of behaving the way you expect a predator to behave. Mm-hmm. If you're honorable to them and save their life, we kind of know they're going to do the same to you. You know what I mean? And I like seeing it. I always like seeing it, because I liked seeing him save the doctor that was saving him and everything. I love that stuff. That's one of my that's some of my favorite stuff about Predator.
And the doctors have a actual soul. Like, they're saying we shouldn't even be experimenting on him, but per the corporation's orders, I have to put him in this container unit and see if it kills the alien first or vice versa.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but, you know, talking about like highs and lows, I thought her handling Machiko's character was great, but low, there aren't really that many other characters you really care about in the end.
Yeah.
You know,
they're kind of body shields, unfortunately, which is fine for us looking for the carnage. But like you say, it's kind of it starts off almost ambitiously, then it becomes kind of a lesser Romero, where we're seeing all these hotheads talking back and forth, but they're getting slaughtered just as soon as they're exclaiming dialogue. So it's almost a Friday the 13th moment, which you kind of wish with Stadley, who's also worked on one of your favorite comics, Terminator Secondary Objectives. You wish he could kind of enhance it a little extra.
That was a good one. That was, yeah, Terminator Secondary Objectives. That was a good one. I like that one. Though when I was 12, this was awesome. I didn't kind of care about the characters.
We're going for the
guts. Everything that happens in issues 3 and 4 with the Predator just fighting the aliens and all that kind of stuff. That's what I'm here to see. And, you know, it delivers that. You know, it actually delivers that. There's a bunch of carnage. Both artists, I think, do a great job drawing both Predators and Xenomorphs. I think they do a great job showing the action. That one stupid Predator that kind of saves Machiko, but he also didn't pick a good fight because he fought like 8 Xenos at once and got slaughtered. I love how she's running away and she's like, look, I was taught not to bet on a loser and you're a loser. And I love how he's reaching for her as from the pile of Xenos as she's running. She's like, dude, you done messed up, man. I like that. But the violence was good as a kid. The action was good. As an adult, I wanted more characters. Maybe another issue would have fleshed it out a little bit more. Like in issue zero, it's
so creepy because it's black and white.
I know. And I love that. And it was cool because, you know, it was narrated by the two pilots of that of the ship, the Lector, that was going to basically transport all the cattle off world and everyone was going to get paid and everything. And it was kind of interesting, but I like what they were talking about, how we've sort of moved away from maybe our primal instincts and everything. And everything they're talking about is what we're not, but it is what the Predators are. And the dialogue that they are talking is over top of everything we're seeing with the Predators, because the Predators, you're not seeing them talk. You're hearing the dialogue come from these two guys sort of waxing, you know, and poetic about the meaning of capitalism and where humanity is and our reliance on technology. And I thought it was honestly, man, I thought all of that stuff in 2023 was pretty apparent. But I do remember as a kid barely reading that issue and just looking at the pictures because it was a lot of talking that I didn't care about when I was 12.
For those getting into this, yeah, there was a 90s set, but it didn't include that. And then the later omnibus in like 07 included issue 0. And so it did make you wonder why. And to further the confusion, they were all each featured in an issue of Dark Horse Presents.
Right.
So they were sharing it with all the other labels they had, like RoboCop and Star Wars. And to Corey's point, it is cool to just see the self-aware guy who knows he is doomed. Nothing is going to get better. And then seeing this kind of Star Trek, Solaris kind of crew, kind of instead of being a rehash of the original movie, kind of just we're already seeing them get slaughtered with this narration taking place. And it's a effective montage, I think, because like you say, we're seeing the Predators get out their spears and prepare their ship. And we just know that this is a tidal wave incoming.
No one's going to survive this. Like that's what we know going into it, because these are two of the most, at this point, craziest species in the galaxy, the Predator and the aliens. We've all seen it. We all know it. And remarkably, people do actually survive this
somehow,
encounter.
aside from Machiko.
they actually get some people, you know, kind of survive it and everything. And you know, I kind of wish we saw a little bit more carnage in that regard. But overall, it's still a fun story. I still think it delivers what it needs to deliver, which, you know, it pits these two people. We got what we wanted. We got aliens versus Predator, and we got violence. We got a queen. Yes. We got, you know, Predator cutting off Queen's head. You know, all this kind of, we got all kinds of stuff that we wanted. But I think you're right. It's, you know, it was a little light on substance. I particularly like the scene where one of the settlers' family. Like, the kid has to get away. But, like,
yeah,
I mean, the dog gets gutted. The dad gets his eyeballs ripped out. Mom gets gutted. And the kid has to jump through, like, a plate glass window and hop on his hover bike. And he's all cut up and everything. And I'm like, man, this is intense.
And
when
reading
you think
this
about
with
it.
The visual is terrifying, no matter how old you are. Because,
yeah.
I mean, it's funny how we have these issues all the time with different mediums. Like, what might get you an R rating in a movie might be okay on a primetime show or in a video game that's rated T. And it's so wild here is like, but somehow when just looking at these in the comics, it feels borderline X rated because it's just like, God damn. Well, soaking in the score. This is really.
I think to that point is because you can sit there and look at that panel as long as you want. And I think that's why it feels so visceral. Like in a movie or something, you got the music, you got the editing, it goes by quickly. And whereas here, you can sit there and I can stare at that panel of the predator grabbing the dad by the head with his long fingernails into the dad's eyeballs as he's sort of like picking him up off the shingles of the top of the roof. And I'm like, damn,
it's like a giallo art show. He's like, this can't be real, but it's someone actually sat down and drew this and reprinted this for everyone to be terrified around the world.
Yeah, and Phil Norwood does a great job of like showing like movement and speed and everything. Like when the hover bike hits, you know, broken tusk in the back, you know, there's a lot of it's very kinetic. His artwork is very kinetic, but he also, I think, does a good job drawing mechanical stuff. Like he does a good job drawing all the spaceships. And then on top of it, I think one of the things I loved about this, seeing that sort of thicker predator armor, sort of like, it's almost like military predator armor versus like predator. Now we call him, you know, the jungle hunter. And then in Predator 2, they call him city hunter. That's kind of like now how sort of people refer to them as, but these guys like were decked out in heavy armor that we had never seen before, to the point where Broken Tusk has that head of the xenomorph like on his chest piece, and you can tell it's built into it. It's not like you know welded on, like it's built around it. They built the chest piece around that head, and I liked how beefy they looked. I liked the armor, and I liked the way Phil Norwood sort of, it felt like Predator armor even though it was new. It felt like it fit that universe, you know.
1000%. And to your point earlier, just seeing this armor become a character much like the actual character is really neat. And to actually, like you say, it's kind of almost a Boba Fett kind of train where you're just like, the amount of mystery, you don't know what the creature is going to be like. Even with the voice box, you're just like, well, I could go either way. He might be a scientist creature, or who am I kidding? Of course he's gonna be either an unstoppable killing machine like the Terminator, but he might have a heart.
He's not built for science. He's science. Built for killing.
He is the science.
He is the science.
He's the Jurassic Park T-Rex. Yeah. But are any of these other predator creatures gonna be illustrated, or should I just find out, get off my ass and read Booty and more?
Honestly, man, it's been so long since I've read the rest of the series. I don't even have, like, I have all my original issues in my mom's house, but you know, I have the Aliens omnibus, I have the Predator omnibus from that Dark Horse put out. Unfortunately, you know, obviously you can't get this omnibus anymore or those, because Dark Horse doesn't own the property rights anymore. Marvel has it, and sadly Marvel has not reprinted these issues in you know, like in something you can buy now. I had to read them like online for free. I don't condone that, because I have Comixology. Yep. And I was gonna go buy it off of Comixology, and they don't have them there either. So, and I was like, uh-oh, like I kind of panicked 2 days ago when my wife saw me. She's like, you sound panicky. And I'm like, I can't find these issues anywhere. And
they aren't reprinted all that much. I don't know why. I wish Dark Horse would come up with its own app.
But the thing is, they can't now. They legally can't sell any of those because they don't have the rights to them anymore. It's just Marvel. I don't know why Marvel is sitting on the Aliens versus Predator one, because Marvel has reprinted the Dark Horse Aliens and the Dark Horse Predator stuff, and they call it the quote unquote original years. That's how they sort of distinguish it. So you can get those and you can read those. And I think they did it for Terminator.
Maybe Aliens versus Predator, no. Dynamite might be able to get the comic? Because it seems, I mean, I know they did it with Die Hard. They did a prequel comic.
Yeah. Yeah. Dynamite is also putting out some good stuff. And then IDW has a lot of licenses, like with the Ghostbusters comic and everything. I actually used to work at Diamond Comic Distributors back in the early 2000s. Those are the cats that put out previews and everything. So anytime you go into a comic book store, pretty much everything in a comic book store comes from Diamond Distributors. And I was a customer service rep for a bit. So we get like a bunch of free stuff. But I haven't actually been reading current comics. I haven't read any of like the Marvel alien stuff, you know, like the new stuff. I haven't read any of that stuff now.
Yeah, your guess is as good as mine. It might be fun, like some of the Star Wars comics, or it might be kind of like, well, interesting idea and artwork, but the heart's not there. So I'll definitely check them out and let you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and as a lifelong, you know, comic reader, you know, people get like, you know, I'm not going to spoil anything, but, you know, there's been rumblings that this season of Mandalorian isn't quite as good as other ones. People aren't quite loving this phase of Marvel as much as they were the previous ones and everything.
Yep.
And I'm not saying whether I agree or not, but I'm saying as a lifelong comic book reader, that actually makes it feel more like comic books in my book, because so many times where I'd keep reading Predator and I'd be like, man, this miniseries sucks. You know what I mean? Like the art sucks, the writing sucks, but you know what? I'll keep reading it. And then hopefully the next miniseries will be better, but there's always ups and downs. And if anything, the ups and downs make these comic book movies feel more comic booky, to be honest with you.
Yeah, very much so. You can't hit it out of the park every time. And I mean, just like any of these other franchises, we're finding sequels that were, you know, left off. And I do like how some, whoever they currently have with these new franchises, are both accomplished screenwriters and lifelong fans. And obviously you can't please everyone. I'm seeing some of the toxic kind of fandom that I saw with Halloween and Star Wars kind of carrying over into Star Trek. And it's like, well, guys, you're literally doing the same thing you did with all the last 10 installments. You know, it's just all, it what, never got loved up front. And then it got liked after a while.
what's the toxicness in Star Trek right now? What's everyone hating on?
Basically, it's very complex. Some fans don't really, will be vague, like the Star Wars guys, and then some of them will actually come clean. I don't feel like these writers are familiar with my version of track. And it's like, okay, well, that's called gatekeeping.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
It's all part of the whole universe. Like, you don't have to like them all, but they all appear in each other's shows without disrupting the plot. That's why I liked it. But
I watched Strange New Worlds. I thought that was some of the best Star Trek I've ever seen.
They're trying to make part 5 make sense by explaining Spock's half brother. I'm like, yeah, you might as well do that, since, like, to your earlier point, there's a special edition of just about every other Holt movie, so you might as well make the plot holes or stuff that made better sense in the novelization actually be reintroduced.
Right, and that happens a lot with, like, novelizations. You actually get, like, more info about the movie. That happens a lot in Star Wars. You'll kind of get some extra background, and it's like, oh, and then sometimes they actually bring that into quote unquote canon, you know, because a lot of times I think people don't consider the novelizations really canon, but sometimes something's good enough that they say, you know what, bring that in, man.
Totally. I with this AVP, with this universe we've been discussing all this time, I know you're a fan of the Riddick universe. I always wish, you know, especially when that all came together because of the Wheat brothers who helmed the first Alien script. And David Twohy took his ideas, which were from a rejected Alien-free script. And I just always thought, what a missed opportunity. You might as well build on that in Boom or Dark Horse. And, I mean, Vin Diesel could use that Disney money. Why not?
Universal doesn't like it. I think Riddick fits well into that universe. Yeah, you're right. I do... One of those, I have a list of movies that most people hate and I love, and Chronicles of Riddick, I will die on the hill defending it. I love that he took
I lucked out, man. I saw the director's cut, which was the way it was meant to be seen when it rented, and it helped that my uncle was a big fan of Pitch Black, so I sank right into that universe. I was like, you don't have, I think a lot of people don't even give it enough credibility because they're either like it or hate it with Vin, and I'm like, well, it's just a fun Star Wars, Alien, Babylon 5 almost kind of universe.
Or even Dune. Like, they almost went Dune, as great. Like, and that's what I loved. Like, Pitch Black, I think, is a fantastic movie. I saw it in the theater and I was like, this is special. This is
different. I love
different.
The talking
this
back special you guys awesome. Did on it.
Because yep.
It was, you illustrated how, like you say, like, I mean, just the trivia of that alone, how they just changed the coloring and that made it so alien to us.
So, I know, it's so good. And then the next movie, they're like, no, this is a bigger universe and we're going to go with this giant grandiose. Like, I was there for all of it. I was there opening weekend. And then, you know, I get it. I get why it didn't quite work. I still loved it. But then I also love Riddick, you know, number three. And I was like, good job. They kind of bring it back down to being small again, you know?
1000%. And just this, they show that basically he's, you know, old habits die hard. He's I think that's why I dug the Riddick character in it, essentially, because like you could see him going against a predator because he's an old school kind of hunter. And I think, I know it's an infamous movie and kind of embraced almost kind of like Cyborg for how cheesy it is, but I mean, since I knew that Twihai worked on this, I then finally saw the infamous movie that was Waterworld and was like, see, he totally took that water reptile half human hybrid and I think he embedded it into the Riddick character.
I got a buddy of mine, Diallo, he does TV Obscura with us. He loves Waterworld unapologetically. Like, he's just, and he will die on that hill, and it's one of his favorite movies.
It
and
helps.
I'm just
Charlie Chase, give me back my action movies. Greenlit it, and it helps that the Arrow Blu-ray really repaired a lot of the damage by just those fans took that extended TV cut and they made it better. And hopefully, like you say, I mean, if there's enough of a fandom, I know Riddick 4 will come out sometime soon, but I wish it was a little more recent. It'd be great to have come out this year.
At this point, I don't know how big, like, Vin Diesel's going to be looking old. I would actually maybe prefer just do an animated movie or
like
another video
one,
game.
Yeah.
You know,
a video game. Yeah,
I loved that video game. I loved that short, that animated short that kind of connected the video game to the first movie. I love that universe, man. I love the Riddick universe. And I think Predator would be a perfect fit. I think at the end of the day, they would lock skulls and they'd become best friends. I think they would realize that they can't kill each other and they just become best friends. And I just want to see them actually hunting the universe together as like bounty hunters or something, you know?
I'm down with it because to your point, it did feel like, especially the Cole Hauser character, he definitely gave me a Boba Fett kind of feel where he takes honor in the whole taking on a Furion because he was like the first one to actually capture one because the most time they just killed him or just word of mouth. You didn't, they almost do kind of remind you of the various Mos Eisley and Star Wars and Blade Runner kind of casinos where it's just like everyone just seems to have a sleazy side to them. And then kind of that Total Recall-esque world of you get what you paid for. I'm sorry if you don't like what we're selling you, but you know, it's a rough crowd. So get along or get out.
I just love that kind of universe, man. I just love, you know, kind of going back to aliens and everything. I love the idea of like maybe colonial marine bounty hunters, you know, type of thing. I think that's like a cool idea. But going back to Aliens versus Predator, what's not a cool idea was the movie that came out from this. We can't not talk about now. I didn't rewatch it, so I can't talk, you know, maybe as much because I did read this comic, but I can talk off memory about the Aliens versus Predator movie and how utterly disappointed I was when I walked out of that theater. Like, how do you make two rated R franchises come together to make PG-13? Like, that told you everything you needed to know going into Aliens versus Predator the movie.
Fortunately, there is an unrated version which puts all some of the backstory and gore back in, but like you say, the damage was done. And because we never really liked the characters, they still feel like some producer got the wise ass idea of how would I make them unlikable like Friday the 13th guys. I'm like, no, that's a different kind of camp. I don't want AVP to be campy.
Exactly. Did you see that like opening weekend when it came out?
I saw the DVD and I rented it and watched it with my uncle who was into that universe. I kind of got shits and giggles because my brother got creeped out by us watching it. I'm like, this is the last movie you want to be. I think I was only impressed by how they got away with yippee-ki-yay motherfucker almost line on a PG-13, but that was it. It didn't fare as well. And part two, you know, everyone's complained about that one enough where most they got was the gross Alien and Predator hybrids, and it just felt like a Town Under Siege B-picture.
Yeah, and it was rated R, but the violence was fine, but you realize violence without some sort of context that you care about, because I think that movie people were even more unlikable. I have a specific hatred for that movie because I saw it in the theater, hated it. Then when the DVD came out, the rated R version, you know, whatever, the uncut version came out, because it's like, it's even better, it's uncut. So I popped the DVD in, and it's like, I hate when they have a selection, yes or no. Do you want to play the theatrical or R-rated or uncut? But you don't know where you're sort of starting on the selection. And if you keep pushing to the right, it just keeps cycling and you can't tell what the color is. So I'm like, so I thought I selected unrated, and there was a specific scene in that movie that I knew was added in where a girl gets like hit by the spear and then her body sort of rips apart. And I got to that part. It's at the end of the movie. I got to that part and I realized I'd watched the rated R version. I was so mad by the crappy, crappy menu that I never went back to go and rewatch. And I didn't even finish that viewing. I was like, I hate you so much, AVP Requiem. I hate you.
Well, and to be fair, it just seems like Fox just flipped the script on so many of their properties, and where everything did bad at a test screening and everything had an unrated version, to where you just knew that, like you say, it wasn't you didn't know if anything was going to be fixed, but more likely than not, it probably wasn't going to be.
Yeah, it never is. It's never fixed with the unrated version, you know. Like even you know, Jason Goes to Hell, the unrated version is infinitely better than the regular one, but it doesn't fix that movie, you know, per se.
Right, it's just for, I mean, you guys talked about it with Cyborg where you're like, hey, the first impression of it really ruined it for me so much. I've been trying to reintroduce Johnny Mnemonic to people because I finally saw it uncut the way it was meant to be seen, totally rescored, re-edited. You don't get any of those unintentionally funny moments like the I Want Room Service, but the damage is done. I tried telling it to some pals and they're like, hey, I'm sorry, I just had such an awful experience watching that movie. They refused to watch it. I'm like, okay, well, I'm just letting you know, this fixed it 100%.
Which Blu-ray version is that? Is that the black and white that just came out, or
this was the German Blu-ray before the recent one?
Okay, because I saw Johnny Mnemonic in the theater and I kind of enjoyed it, but I like cyberpunky, you know,
it's
style
so much more
movies.
Cyberpunk, different beginning too.
Okay, okay,
he's with a prostitute explaining how he feels about the world, and she gives him a tough remark saying that'll be an extra, you know, whatever,
right,
in time, and then you get these Blade Runner kind of intros and like, see, this is, and it just pains me that it came on Netflix when Altered Carbon was such a surprise hit for them.
Yeah.
And it's still the theatrical. I'm like, see, that is not the version people should be seeing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually makes me want to go hunt down that one. Once we're done talking, I'm going to go hit that up. Yeah,
I'd give you my Blu-ray, but it was so expensive, I can't give it up.
No, it's all good. And Zach and I are talking, man, we got to get Region Freeze Blu-ray players one of these days, because
it's so hard.
I know, I do everything through the PS5, and I find that it plays most things, but it won't play UK Arrow videos. The only UK Arrow one I have is Life Force, which has one of the best covers I've ever seen on a Blu-ray. And I popped it in one time just to test it, and it doesn't work. But like a lot of the Australian stuff, like Umbrella, but then again, they produce theirs in region free. So you can get some good stuff from Umbrella.
I love Umbrella. I totally recommend, not only because it's cheaper, but because of the video essay commentary, the Enemy Mine Blu-ray.
Oh, from Umbrella. Okay. That's a movie. Yeah, I'm sure you've heard me talk about it on Pad, but that's a movie where I watched that so much as a kid and I loved it, kind of like Millennium. And I haven't seen it in like 35 years, you know?
I'm glad you brought up Millennium, man. It's so underrated. And it seems like people are now primed for it. Like, there's so much wonderful stuff getting uploaded all the time. I mean, you covered that unofficial X-Files Millennium spinoff, Strange Luck, on TV Obscura. But it is interesting how so much stuff is connected to one and each other, and how people have to realize this, like, studios don't care or understand how much we appreciate the movies, and half the stuff that is crossed over but it has to be through a different studio. And back to these comics, I mean, I wish we talked about the Blade. I had Travis Bowe from Real Comics Heroes on, and we talked about the movie inspired Blade comics specifically.
Yeah.
And I miss that days. I'm sure you do too, where they would actually have a free comic that would come with, like, the first pre-order of a DVD or Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And
yeah, the golden age.
Physical media, man, is like, because if Arrow can do and Severin can do all these driving classics and just downright wonderful remasters with posters and all, you would like to think they'd one up it even more with all the Kickstarters and crowdfunders. And
I mean, I am happy that we are seeing, I think, a bit of a resurgence in people wanting to get physical media. I think, and I'm a big fan of physical media, and I think that the streaming revolution was, I think, a scam, and I think it's trash. And but I'm glad that we have these companies like Umbrella, like 88 Films, and whatnot. Like, they put out, Umbrella put out the Punisher, the Dolph Lundgren.
I got that one too.
Yeah, yep. I do too, because he actually has the director's cut on there and
three versions. You can't. That's great,
dude. It has a cool cover and everything. So guys and gals out there, if you're listening, Australia, Umbrella, like I said, is an Australia based Blu-ray company, but they produce all their Blu-rays region free. So never, if you see
never
something,
falter.
Yeah, never falter. Pick up something by Umbrella. They put out some great stuff. Obviously, you know, we all love Severin. We all love Vinegar Syndrome. We all love Arrow and you know, Scream Factory, aka Shout Factory, and all that kind of stuff.
Remasters. I had the opportunity to talk to Justin Beam, who's done a lot of these remasters, especially for Shout and Scream Factory and Paramount. And he says, it's like, as long as you're patient with the interviews, it will totally get done. You know, you will have so much fun just seeing these people tell these stories that for the longest time, no one even gave a shit, you know, other than an occasional convention. They didn't want to, they just thought, hey, you know, I'm good. I don't want to know. It's like, oh, but you really do.
Yeah. And I mean, nowadays, like, I think the cult movie scene is getting more intense. And then we've actually had discussions on like, at this point, can a movie change from being a cult movie? Because when I was growing up in the 80s and the 90s, John Carpenter's The Thing was very much a cult movie. Nowadays, I think everybody and their brother loves that film and talks about it. So is it really a cult movie anymore, or has it moved into mainstream? You know what I mean?
Lovely question. I take it they're going to show their faces eventually. But it seems like there's even canon films. Like, I don't know how much of that fandom, I mean, you mentioned Life Force earlier, like, how much of that is from certain movies versus the documentary that came out about 6 years ago. So
yeah,
how everyone gets to the same thing, I mean, it is always intriguing, how much of it is I read it in a cheesy movie book versus I saw the IMDb trivia back in the day. And
and I think that's, you know, a good point you bring up. I read that in the cheesy, you know, movie book. That's what back in the day, that's what podcasts, you know, to kind of get
all
it out
I
there.
Read was
exactly.
You, books.
Yeah. Like Gorehound, you get the idea of like what, you know, yeah. And I used to read Rumorg, used to read Fangoria and all that kind of stuff. And that's how, you know, we got the information about what was coming and what to sort of track down when I went to horror conventions and would go to the bootleg area and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, like on Podcasting After Dark and on TV Obscura, you know, we kind of try to champion these things. And you know, we're not snarky. We don't like to be snarky. We like to be loving. Maybe sometimes we're too loving to some things, but I would rather love something hate it, you know?
I hate to mention someone else because it sounds like I'm just shit talking, but like there was even some cheesy movie podcast I've listened to that just sound like there's no redeeming a movie. And it just irks me because I like to think that you can pull a Heaven's Gate and offer a different alternate cut of something that fixes it. And you make up, I mean, Kingdom of Heaven has, I think, kind of popularized in post DVD world how you can get a totally different movie, but it was kind of seen as, I'm with you, it seems like it's kind of still kind of with certain cult crowds or an art house or A24 crowd. And like, if you love something enough, you should totally revisit it. And even if you hate it, you might still check it down a decade from now, unless, again, the damage was too much. But like I mean, say, it's just...
people change. Like if you didn't like a movie when you were a kid, I say revisit it. You might like it, you know, now because it might not have been meant for you at the time or, you know, or whatever. But I do like introducing my nephew. You know, I don't have any kids, but I do have an 8-year-old nephew. So for the past couple years, we've been doing like movie night and everything. And I've shown him like the Star Wars trilogy, the original ones. And I think we're going to do the prequels like soon. Showed him like Speed Racer, which I love that movie. Nice. I think that movie's fantastic. But what he popped hardest for, what he loved the most, was the original Tron, 1981's Tron. And so he was sitting in between us. And I don't know when the last time you watched that movie, but we all know the light cycle battle. But there's a light cycle scene at the beginning of the movie that's like a shorter light cycle scene. Right when that pops on screen, he let out an involuntary, oh. And I looked over at my wife and I'm like, we got him.
There's no turning back now.
But kind of like, sort of that's an adjacent way of saying that, like, you know, movies are timeless. And a movie that's as old as Tron, I still say, even Tron Legacy, I still say nothing looks like Tron, the original. Even Tron Legacy doesn't look like Tron. It is a wholly unique experience, and I think it holds up well. And I love the fact that he, and the thing is, we sent him home, and then for the rest of the week, he watched it every day on Disney Plus. My sister-in-law texted us.
He's a cyberpunk kid, too.
He loves it, you know? And I'm like, that's great. I love it. And then we showed him Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Well, he was like, why is this guy so happy about killing people? And I'm like, oh. I was like, oh, you don't understand Nazis. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, 12, oh.
And I got it right away without having to fill in the blanks.
And he's eight and he doesn't sort of have that context, you know? So I hope maybe one day he revisits that with a little bit more context. Maybe he'll enjoy it more. But
he might even like the indie comics.
Exactly.
Some great ones there. I mean, that's another property that, much like the games, to see them kind of build on it. And it was all, again, it was all canon. It all kind of like the Star Trek. They would illustrate the exact date. And that was the essence of the story. What was happening in this fictional history element? And he was probably helping Pancho Villa or stealing a treasure from a dictator who didn't realize he had a stolen treasure.
Exactly. I love it.
Satirical in a way.
What was those old PC games, those old PC point and click Indiana Jones games, like Curse of Atlantis or something like that, and you know, whatnot.
Doomsday Machine. And that was another one where when Crystal Skull came out, it was just sort of devastating to hear that they wanted to actually, Jeb Stuart, the writer of Die Hard, I think, wanted to do kind of what was inspired by the Atlantis stuff and the Infernal Machine game and novels. And Lucas kept shooting it down, saying, let's just do a homage movie. And I can't wait for this new one. I know some people are like, that ship has sailed, but I'm just like, you know, it's interesting. Just to see what franchises are alive and which ones are kind of on their way out.
Yeah. And I wasn't a big fan of Crystal Skull, honestly. And growing up as a kid,
aliens. Ironically, they were the problem.
But like, I mean, I liked Indiana Jones as a kid, but that wasn't one of my like my top franchises. Yeah. It was top 10, maybe, but not top 5. I didn't watch it as much as I watched Star Wars, Aliens, Mad Max, Tron, and Ghostbusters. Those are my five. Hey. You know,
you saw most of the 80s favorites, you know, and it is funny too, when you talk to 80s kids, what is their first 80s movie that ignites their passion the most? And so I think, like you said earlier, these 80s, late 80s and early 90s comics unified the AVP fan base early on.
Yes.
didn't keep them separate. It's like they weren't a rival sports team like people were petitioning at first. And then with the other sagas, some people would often just pick just one team. You're a Star Wars guy. You're a Back to the Future guy. You're a Murrow guy.
You're right. This sort of brought them all in together and sort of, you know, probably, I'm sure, forced, you know, some people to go back and maybe reread the Alien stuff if they'd only been reading the Predator stuff. So I'm sure Dark Horse saw this as, you know, as a profitable thing, because as we saw, they went on to do all kinds of Terminator versus Predator versus Aliens. You know, they went on to do all kinds of things, RoboCop versus Terminator and things like that. The
shame
RoboCop
Lucas didn't allow a Star Wars crossover.
I know. I love, there's someone who's, I think it was no, it wasn't Alex Ross. Somebody did some great art of stormtroopers fighting xenomorphs, and you can find them online easily. Man. And it's so good. It's so good.
I imagine, dude.
Yeah. I mean,
and now the alien and predator creatures are kind of inherent in every kind of monster nowadays. Both the Orville and you mentioned Star Trek Strange New Worlds. I love how they reimagined the Gorn and had them making predator noises, but kind of get created like a xenomorph face hugger. And I was like, see, I'm down for that. I love when Track gets creepy and has like a hologram trying to kill people or some shit like that.
Yeah, me too. I like that stuff. I think that stuff is really cool. I did want to mention, because you were talking about director's cuts and all that kind of stuff. Aliens director's cut. I prefer Aliens director's cut because I like the minigun stuff and everything. although when I show my nephew Aliens, I'm going to show him the theatrical cut just for time, because it's such a long movie with the director's cut.
Right.
But I do not like the Alien director's cut, because Ridley Scott put back in the scene of Ripley discovering Dallas getting turned into the egg, because, you know, at the time they didn't have the queen idea. And at the time, the idea was that he would take that the Xeno would take the humans and they would melt into the egg and turn into the egg. And that's not canon now, obviously. So like, when I go back and rewatch them, I watch Alien theatrical cut, Aliens director's cut, Alien 3 assembly cut, right, which is AKA the director's cut.
Rough cut.
And, and I watch, Alien Resurrection. I watch the theatrical cut of that one. Although that's probably my least favorite of all of them. So
fair enough. I was already kind of struggling with them in this Terminator crossover, because they brought them back and I've just never been a Winona Ryder fan. So this is like, but in all fairness, I mean, I did like the ideas with all these taxi driver type guns. I think you included them in your favorite space guns episode.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Just to see that kind of, those mercs deserved their own comic book or movie.
they were so cool. And
Ron
Resurrection.
Freaking Perlman.
Yeah. Ron Perlman,
mentally
Michael
handicapped guy. And
dude,
you kind of like
Michael
him.
Michael Wincott.
Those, yes. The crow guy. Yeah.
And he dies. He's the first one to die. And when I saw in the theater, I love Michael Wincott. I think he's fantastic. When I saw in the theater and he's like the first one to die of the mercs, like my interest level in the entire movie just plummets at that point. You know,
it really does. Cause his cynicism is so welcome. Unlike, it's not like Paul Reiser where you're supposed to hate him as the corporate goon.
Right.
Or as some of the prisoners in Alien Free who are patsies, you know, being taken advantage of. I call that Alien meets Oz, but Resurrection is like you get that guy's in a wheelchair, he's piloting it, and it's like, see, there's clearly something more to him. Either that or the actor, again, you know, did what all good actors do and just created a character backstory, and it just somehow felt like it made the final cut.
Exactly. And that's honestly some of the best stuff, when you can, you know, even if you don't know the backstory, and this is what I look for in like sci-fi stuff, I want the writer, I want the filmmaker, subtext. I want them to know what happened before the first frame that we see. I want them to know. We don't have to hear about it. And I honestly go back and just watch A New Hope in a vacuum. Watch it without any thought in your head about what came before and what comes after, yada yada yada.
Yes.
And Lucas does such a great job. Your dad fought in the Clone Wars. Like, just the idea, like as a kid, your brain was like, what was the Clone Wars, man? Like, and just, but the fact that he was talking about something that happened before the movie gives you a sense of history, gives you a sense that this world is a living, breathing world. And I think that's why movies like Star Wars sort of, you know, exist and they keep going, is because the filmmakers create these things. And they did that in Alien, man. Like, I feel like they knew what the world was like, even if we didn't. I feel like Ridley Scott had a very clear idea of what, like, the universe was that this story inhabited and everything.
It was so creepy without even looking at it. Just that Foley mixing and just... I think I lost. That was the first movie where I lost track of how many times I had the remote shielding my eyes.
Right, I know. Yeah, dude. As a kid, man, that movie scared the crap out of me. Oh. And I'm not a big fan of Prometheus, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea that man, to me, again, I kind of go with the Dark Horse comics. I go Aliens, then the Dark Horse comics. I like the fact.
And then Blade Runner.
then Blade Runner. And I like the fact that, like, the space jockey, it was just another cargo ship that crashed on a planet. And it's basically a story of two trucker teams, you know, just going through space. And that's it.
Building that world and showing it's not just mercs or corporate goons, it's all kinds of colorful people. And
I don't need the xenomorphs to have a creation connection back to, like, us and our androids. I don't need all of that. I think it takes away from it. I want there to be just, these things are the creeping death of the galaxy, essentially. You know what I mean?
Something, man. Just, and if anything, if they do another versus like that, or just a build onto it, I mean, with Prey coming out, and I saw some of the influence, I think, of Machiko and company kind of in that one. I really do hope this alien show by the Fargo guys really goes to town and does its job. Because like I say, you know, that every franchise, if people keep coming back to it, they do want more. But how more of it do you get before you oversaturate it? You know, it's just...
Yeah, and I think we see that with maybe with Star Wars. Now, granted, I will consume every bit of Star Wars content that comes at me, but I don't feel like I get to savor it at the moment. Like my wife was out of town for a week and I was like, you know what? I got to rewatch Book of Boba Fett because I only saw it once. I have an entire case over here of Boba Fett toys because I saw Return of the Jedi in the theater when I was 5 years old. It's my first movie experience that I can remember. Lovely. And I was obsessed with that's still my favorite Star Wars movies, Return of the Jedi. I love Jabba's Palace. Boba Fett was so cool to me and everything. But, you know, like, we're so inundated that, like, I'm like, I can't, as a Star Wars fan, I've watched all these movies so many times, but we also had so much breathing room in between things.
Too much.
And now it's just boom, 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 boom. And I'm like, Boba Fett's my favorite character, and I've only seen Book of Boba Fett once. So I rewatched it when she was away. It's still, whatever, you know, but it's fine. I'm not going to hate on it because I've read so many Boba Fett comics that I was like, And, you know, and it didn't take away my love for Boba Fett. I can disassociate content with, like, my love for the character, but I just think it's like, it's so much saturation at this point. We can't even breathe with it.
It kind of went into homage territory near the end where they're having... what's his name? The Jabba's giant creature.
The Rancor.
The Rancor is kind of the Godzilla of the town. And it's like, well, that's fun, but I kind of want a little more than that.
I wanted so much more. Yeah. Mainly, I wanted Boba Fett to have more agency, whereas he pretty much walked around and kind of reacted to everything as opposed to actually...
He was kind of like Mad Max more instead of just a guy who fends for his own.
But, you know, but with Mad Max, you accept it because he's always reluctant. Whereas Boba Fett wasn't reluctant. He's like, I'm just going to be a crime lord now.
I'm just going to kill everybody.
And then by the end of it, he looks at Fennec Shand. He's like, I don't think we're cut out for this. And I'm like, well, then why did I watch 6 episodes if you're not cut out for this? You know what I mean? Whereas Mad Max, you know, it's one of those things where it's like self-preservation. He kind of doesn't want to be there. And it's self-preservation. And then he kind of learns to care, and he kind of, you know, his cold dead heart sort of becomes warm and everything, and you can rinse and repeat that. I'm fine with that. Like, I personally love Fury Road. I think that's my favorite Mad Max movie. I love Mad Max. I love Road Warrior, but I think Fury Road is fantastic. I don't think they should have done a Furiosa sequel. I think they should just do standalone Mad Max stories. Well, how do they get his car back? Well, first off, he needs his car in every movie, and it can get destroyed, but they need to bring it back in every movie because
that's
Mad Max without his
story,
car, it's his gun. He's a gunslinger. That's his weapon of choice. He's a samurai. That's his weapon of choice. And I say that because Mad Max is the same genre as a gunslinger movie, which is also the same genre as a samurai movie. They're very similar, and Mad Max is the same thing, except the car is his weapon, and he needs it. It's his Excalibur. He has to have it. But I think they should have just kept going with just random stories. Another story about Mad Max in the wasteland, and it, no connection to anything else. And I think that would have worked well. But I'll go see Furiosa, of course. Of course I'll go see it, you know?
Yeah, there's no telling what we'll have by this point. I mean, because it seems like, I don't think they're not going to kick investors out, but they definitely are taking more of a risk on streaming. But it's kind of ridiculous how we're kind of in that in-between bracket. How much of it is made for video movies that have big name stars that don't go to theaters, and how much of it is, like you say, a slow burn with a kick-ass finale? And I do hope they find the perfect way to kind of make us wait without making us lose patience in our sagas.
Exactly. I mean, and I think Mad Max would be a great one for a TV show. I think budgetary would be kind of hard. Maybe animated, man. Like, you can do so much with animated shows.
I mean,
shows.
They did a video game. It's
that video game is fantastic. Is it? I have it. When I was living in Santa Monica, I was working at a video game localization company, and the guy who ran that company, he used to work for Warner Brothers, and he was the guy that worked on, he went back and forth between George Miller while he was working on Fury Road and the video game. And he was kind of like the guy that kind of helped the video game stay like true to the movie, kind of kept them sort of, you know, together. And so when the video game came out, it did feel like, you know, the movie could have fit after it and everything. So
as opposed to you're doing an extended version of this 1 minute fight scene. You know?
Exactly.
It always varied with me. And don't get me wrong, I played the shit out of various Star Wars games, but every once in a while I would see other kind of games try to be like that, and it just didn't work as well. I'm like, see, there's no need for this story expansion. You know, I just want to fight the guy like in the movie.
Yeah, sometimes some things aren't meant to be in that format. Like Masters of Terracotta for Star Wars game for PS1, a fighting Star Wars game. It was
so
terrible.
Underrated. I always wanted to play it. And
I have it up there. I'll show it to you once we're done recording.
Okay, sure.
but sometimes the video game perfectly fits the source material. And that Mad Max game, I think, was a great example of that. And there's been some great Aliens versus Predator games, too, to sort of tie it back into our topic and everything.
And don't they allow you to play as Marines also in those?
Yeah, a lot of times it's either Marine, Aliens, or Predator. And there was a good one for the PS4 that came out. I think Rebellion put it out. It was pretty good. But yeah, three campaigns.
Why was Isolation so infamous despite Sega recruiting some of the voice actors back?
Yeah, Isolation I didn't play because I'm not a fan of like stealth stuff, man. I just want to shoot stuff. But that Aliens Fireteam Elite game that came out about 2 years ago, I have literally played that every day for the past 2 years. That's my happy place game, because it's the game I've waited my entire life for, because I just want to be a Colonial Marine shooting xenomorphs. That's all I want to do, you know?
All I want. Yeah, there you go. I'm with you, dude. And here's hoping the best for this universe. And
here's hoping, my friend.
For those who don't have access to it on the comic books, you know where to find it, or just make time to buy. I mean, I just bought some Starship Troopers comics I couldn't find anywhere else, you know? So eBay's probably your best bet. If any places you recommend for used comics? I know there's like a few.
I always hit up like local scenes, you know, obviously support your local comic book shop. Totally. I try not to buy things off of Amazon. I try to, you know, go to the comic book store, but man, local comic shop here, I went and ordered the Grant Morrison omnibus for Invisibles, cause I've always wanted to read it. It was like $150. That's, you know, that's how much it is. Hardcover, $150. But on Amazon, it's like, you know, because it's Amazon, it's cheaper. It was like 110. And I'm like, you know, but I'm like, but I need to support my local comic book store.
Right.
Yeah. Try to go find the back issues. Starship Troopers, that was a great comic series. The first the first three issues called Insect Touch. It was a three-issue miniseries. It's a prequel to the movie. It's so good. It's so violent. It's so good. You see how Razchek gets his arm cut off, how he loses his arm. It's super violent. Artwork is fantastic.
Then they revisited it in 07 by copying the CGR cartoon, which predated Halo, you know?
And a cartoon that I absolutely adore. And we talked about it on TV Obscura. Mm-hmm. That was a great cartoon. People actually die in it, you know, and everything.
I couldn't believe it. I'm like, TV, why seven?
Yes, I know. And I remember when I was a kid, it was like, I think I was working at the video store at the time, because I think it was late 90s. And it was like one of the shows that was on like on Sunday at like 6 a.m. or something, because they didn't know what to do with it. You know,
Fox Kids, then sci-fi. I remember your episode. It was
Check that one out, guys. If you can track that one down, the CGI Starship Troopers, it's called The Roughneck Chronicles. Check that out if you can grab the comics. But yeah, if you can find these, unfortunately, like at this point, it'd probably be cheaper just to buy the four single issues than trying to find an omnibus, because if you go on Amazon, it's so expensive. They're, because since they're out of print, Those Dark Horse omnibuses are going for like $100 on eBay. I'm like, no, I would rather pay that much for individual issues and
keep making an offer, you know, with individual pals, find a way to do it. I'm having to do it with all these other comics I mentioned. I mean, I was finally able to read I take it you've seen the Boom. It's either Boom or Dynamite, similar sister companies. They did a crossover with Big Trouble in Little China and Snake Plissken.
Right. Yes, I have not read them, but I'm aware of their existence. And I think you're right. I think that was Boom. And you know what? Speaking of also comic adaptations, the IDW Ghostbusters comic series is by Dan Shonin and Dapper Dan Shonin. And I forgot the writer. But it's so good. It's awesome, so good. Yeah, it's a great series, and it actually canonically takes place after Ghostbusters 1, Ghostbusters 2, and then that Atari Ghostbusters video game that came out in the early 2000s. They actually make that canonical part 3, and the series branched off from there. And they even got to the point where they did interdimensional crossovers with the real Ghostbusters. And the artist, Dan Shonin, can reproduce cartoon cell animation style so perfectly. It's amazing.
And just to make everyone happy, you know, that you don't exclude all these fandoms, you know, and it's just cool to see it actually take effect, because it seemed like it took a convention often to remind everybody, hey, we're glad you were part of this and that, but then to actually repurpose it in a third kind of medium and remind everybody, by the way, we're including you all, and it's still alive and well. So
And I don't know when the word fan service became a bad word. Like, your fans are the ones that got you there. So, I mean, throw in an Easter egg, throw in some fan service for the fans. Show that you care about the fans, because I guarantee if you don't, they're the ones that are going to scream the loudest and, you know, cancel whatever that movie is. You know,
Mythic Quest does a good job. Recommend it. If you're fans of the Always Sunny guys and Community guys, they're all working on it. But they make fun of all the clueless executives and who don't know about the property that they've inherited. And they always end every conversation by going, and by the way, this doesn't make any difference. The fans are going to hate it either way because something's off.
it's like when Kathleen Kennedy was like talking with Rise of Skywalker came out, and she's like sipping on the tears of the fanboys, and I'm like, is that really the direction you want to go? Do you really want to alienate your fans? No, I don't either, and I don't think it went well for her. So but I do recommend this, honestly, you know, to swing it all the way back around. If you can pick up these issues, I think it's a fun time. At the very least, it's history. It's a part of history now. This is where it all started. It's so much better than the two crappy Aliens versus Predator movies that we got, but it's still not, I'd say, the best Aliens or Predator comics that I've ever read. It's still not the best.
It's just a blueprint.
it's a blueprint, and I think it's a fun blueprint, and it does its job as to introducing everything and sort of setting up stuff that I think we're going to see in the, you know, you will keep seeing, which is like the predators are the ones that kind of, you know, unfortunately put down the aliens, like in stuff in areas and things like that. It's always the predator's fault that the alien gets loose in these aliens versus predator things. But I liked, Someone's got to start it. And I like how this one, at least unlike sort of the other movies or the movies where the sort of the predator alien gets out or something, in this one, it was as simple as we didn't inhabit this planet 3 years. We just inhabited this planet 3 years ago. I guarantee they've been hunting this planet, you know, now granted, how did the predators with their advanced technology not pick up on the fact that there were other life forms, you know, new life forms on the planet, but they did. I still like that idea that we were the interlopers, and it was never, we were never a part of the equation. Like it, we just messed things up sort of. I like that. And I thought that that was something cool that this comic brought to the table. So I recommend it as sort of my final thoughts on it. I think it's worth checking out. Great art, you know, and you know, maybe a B minus story, but A plus artwork, I'd say.
Totally. As much as we talked about the characters vary, some are well used, others are kind of wasted. Yeah, again, just a little style over substance really eases this up to a passable grade. And like you say, just it'll remind everybody, I think, in 2023 eyes of just how far we've come, how to properly utilize a license of some giant property. And like you say, it's just someone had to start the show, and this was where it was.
Yep. Couldn't have said it better myself.
You got an innumerable amount of material coming out.
Sure. Yeah. Guys and gals, you can go check out Podcasting After Dark. You know, all the links to all the podcatchers and everything can be found at podcastingafterdark.com. We got merch and everything. And like everybody, we have a Patreon page. And right now, we basically are going through John Carpenter's full filmography. We call it the Carpenter Factor. It's under our auteur de force tier.
Plenty of thing talk and
yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's fun to sort of see, you know, just the whole history of his film. Like we're going movie by movie, month every month in a row is the next movie, and we've done it from Dark Star, and we just recorded last night. We recorded In the Mouth of Madness, and that will drop next month, which. May, I guess. Yeah, May. Body Bags. We just dropped Body Bags. So Zach and I are having fun with that. But the main show, you know, weekly main show, and we also have TV Obscura. That's on the free feed as well. So go check us out, podcastingafterdark.com. And if you like Seinfeld, I also have a Seinfeld after show called Cartwright. Cartwright, a Seinfeld podcast. And my buddy and I, we've gone through Seinfeld, so we're actually working on Curb, and Curb is Patreon exclusive over there. So, you know, I mean, I always say to everybody, you know, it's expensive out there. We get it. 5-star reviews, like that always helps. It's a free way to help out shows. And I say any show you listen to, any podcast you listen to, mine, yours, you know, any podcast, just leave a 5-star review. I don't even care if it's not for mine. Just leave some podcast a 5-star review, because we're all out here trying to entertain. You guys do a great job. You know, we're all producing content. We're all trying to help each other get through this crazy world by taking people's minds off of things for a little bit.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.